This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
You turn down love like it's really bad. Ow. You can't give what you never had, yeah. Well, bless your soul, you can fool a few.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Bomarito Automotive Family is one of our great sponsors. If you're looking for a car, look no further than the Bomarito Automotive Family. They do it better than anybody. They've been doing it better than anybody for over 10 years. They've sold the most cars in the state of Missouri in each of the last 10 years, over 30,000 cars sold. Go to bomarito.com for more information. All right. Kenny Rice, NBC Sports, 1120. Martin will be here at 11. Let's check in now with our friend Mike Claiborne right now. Mike, good to be with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. We have so much to discuss. Let's begin with your weekend in Chicago, where you saw a pitching staff give up 22 earned runs in 24 innings. What's going on there?
Well, you know what? It was one of those things that ran to a really good team to swing the bat well. And I'm not sure who would have been able to stop them. And, you know, it all of a sudden happened just like that. I mean, if you look at each starter, they were just cruising. And all of a sudden, there'd be a home run or there'd be something. And then the bullpen just couldn't hold it. But I think more what was glaring, Frank, is the fact that we just didn't get any timely hitting. I mean, they had golden opportunities and just couldn't push runs across the plate, especially on Saturday against Darvish. I mean, they could have KO'd that guy early, and they didn't. And I think that when you had that situation, along with maybe your bullpen springing a leak here and there, and your starter maybe having one or two bad batters to face, it all added up. And when you have a good team like the Cubs are playing right now, that's what you have, a sweep.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. The stuff, like Flaherty's stuff on Friday was just unbelievable, and he had a bad inning. And then Wainwright,
and you know what? One of the things with Flaherty, he was getting squeezed a little bit, and I think the young pitchers, when they get squeezed, they give in to the umpire, and they get it up a little bit in the zone, or maybe it's they don't bite the corner as much as they normally would. And when you do that, you get in trouble. Not blaming the umpires. I think I've had enough about blaming officials over the last, between the NBA, the NHL, and baseball. I've had all I could take.
And the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, little did we know how much officiating was going to have an impact in our spring sports. But, you know, it's one of those learning processes that I think he's going through. And I remind people, you know, while he may seem more mature, he's still 23 and learning how to pitch compared to learning how to throw.
What do you think the manager's thinking was in not only allowing Wainwright to start the sixth, which I didn't have a big issue with, but keeping him in there after a couple of hits to face the always dangerous Anthony Rizzo?
I didn't have a problem with it because, first of all, Wainwright had been pitching extremely well. What did he give up, two hits before that particular situation? You know, his pitch count was reasonably low for him. I didn't really have a problem with it. And, you know, I think what we're seeing, though, more than anything else, and it's not just Wainwright, I think this league has become so prone to disaster once you go through the order twice. That third time around, the hitters have honed in on you. And I think one of the problems that we have because of it is because pitchers show their good stuff so early and so often that they know what you have. You know, there was a time when you wouldn't see a guy throw a changeup or a slider until maybe the second time, third time around, just to keep you off balance. Now these guys empty the closet after the first inning. And these hitters go back and they watch a video. They know what to look for. They know what's working for that guy that particular day or night. And they sit on it and they jump all over it. And you don't have to miss by much in order for these guys to make you pay.
Mike Claiborne with us, Hollywood Casino Press Box, and the all-new 590 The Fan. As I said before, I wouldn't trade Paul Goldschmidt for Anthony Rizzo, but one of the stories of the weekend, and you touched on it earlier about timely hitting, is their superstar or their star first baseman had a big weekend with seven RBIs, and Goldschmidt struggled a little bit.
Yeah, and you know what? That happens. I mean, you know, one of the things about the Cubs, you know, Goldschmidt kills the Cubs. If you look at his history, I mean, he owns the Chicago Cubs. especially at Wrigley Field. And granted, it might be a small sample size because he's not in the division. But that was one of the first things when I saw Joe Maddon at the winter meetings. He said, our division just got a lot tougher, especially the Chicago Cubs, because you guys made the best deal in the offseason in signing Goldschmidt. There's great respect for his skill set. It was just one of those weekends. Like I said, timely hitting didn't come through. Although, you know, there's been a little bit of a whisper about the fact, can he catch up to the high fastball? And if you notice the strikeouts, you know, they throw him high and tight these days. And that's a pitch that he's really fighting in. I don't know if he's adjusted to it or not, but I think he's going to see more of it until he is able to adjust and make him do something about it.
Well, it's a big series, too, coming up with Bryce Harper in town. This is going to be some great baseball at the ballpark.
Phillies are a good team. You know, I was never the big Bryce Harper fan and thinking you should spend that kind of money on him. I think he's a good player. But they have some other good players like Realmuto. Segura is a good player. When you look around, they've got some names that we haven't heard a lot about, but they're emerging as far as being good players. So it should be a fun series. They got a good squad.
It'll only be the second biggest event on Tuesday night here in St. Louis. Your impressions of Game 7, the Blues at home where they've struggled, and they're coming off an incredible road victory Sunday.
Well, you know, when you look at what's happened, and I know the game Friday night had a lot of people upset, and, you know, they wanted to just go jump in the river like they always do at this time of the year. But as I said, they were playing with house money. They didn't have anything to lose because nobody thought they'd get there in the first place. So now the question is, can Dallas weather that storm the Blues are going to come out with the adrenaline flow? And if they do, then the Blues are going to have a problem. So should the Blues just come out and play their game like they did yesterday? And I think that's what they got to do in order to beat Dallas, because Dallas is, let's face it, they play Blues well. And I always thought that they would be a better matchup, a tougher matchup than Nashville would be. And I think they've proven that. But I think overall the Blues probably have better talent. But when you see a team for six games, you know, there's nothing new that you can figure out, okay, we're gonna surprise them with this, or we're going to do that, or we're going to switch up line. We've done all that. You just got to go play. And don't worry about anything else, but just do your job. And if you do that, you should be okay. But, man, I've seen game sevens. I was talking to somebody recently, and if you remember the game seven, I believe it was 1970 or 72, Blues playing the Minnesota North Stars, and they go into overtime, and Kevin O'Shea takes a shot from center ice and hits Cesar Maniago's the knob of his goal stick, hits his back, and goes in the net, and that's the game. It's over. So you can be the best team, but you need the best breaks in order to win a game seven.
Small sample size, not even 5 months really, but Jordan Binnington is the best Blues goalie since?
Grant Fuhr.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, you think about what Grant Fuhr did for the Blues in the playoffs. He's got a record that won't be broken, 79 regular season games in a row. And the way he played in that Phoenix series, where they were down and they had to go back to Phoenix and play them in a game seven, and how he played his playoff experience, I think, is something you can't overlook. Now, you may say, well, the goals against was a little higher. Well, they were playing fire wagon hockey back then. So I think when you need big saves, that was Grant Fuhr. But Jordan Binnington, man, is certainly in that conversation. And the way he plays, he's so collected. He's not an acrobatic guy. He just gets in front of the puck, man. And the fact that I like the fact that he doesn't go down so early and bend at the waist where he gives people the top part of the net to shoot at is one of the reasons why I really like his fundamentals and how he plays the game, because he's always square to the shooter, and he seldom is out of position.
If you're the Blues on Tuesday night, is every shot going right at the collarbone right off the bat?
I think if you get a shot, you don't care where it's going as long as it's toward the net. I mean, you got to take advantage of those opportunities. But, you know, if you start trying to focus on one element of the game like that, then I think you're going to put yourself in a tough situation. You just got to keep throwing shots on goal. And maybe there's a juicy rebound, or maybe it's a deflection, or maybe it goes off of somebody's skate. Again, it's game seven where anything can happen and anything and everything is allowed. So, yeah, I would go with that. But I don't think you can just say, all right, boys, when they have their morning skate, let's all start trying to shoot top right-hand side and see where we can hit a guy on the shoulder. Probably not the best idea.
Quick NBA thought. This Jokic does not have a hint of definition. He cannot jump, and yet he's a center who's basically averaging a triple-double in his playoff career. This guy looks like he could be playing in the YMCA, and he's the best center in the world.
You know, I think you and I played against that guy in Sunday morning leagues. You know, I really think I recall playing against guys like that. But here's what I also say to that. I think Jokic is taking advantage of the fact that there are no legitimate bona fide centers in the Western Conference. Capella's a pretty good one, you know, defensively. And then you look over in the East, you don't have any much other than Embiid. So I think what he's done is taking advantage of the lack of players. I mean, it's not like he's out there playing against Nate Thurman, okay? I mean,
or Walt Bellamy or Willis Reed.
Yeah, right. He doesn't have those sort of opponents. So I tip my cap to him for taking advantage of the people that he's playing against. And he is fun to watch. And you're right, he's a nondescript player. You know, Frank, he's that sort of guy that if he showed up at a combine or a tryout, they would be like, okay, who's next?
Yeah.
Or if you're playing basketball in a pickup game and you're picking your team, he's probably not your first guy you're going to take if he shows up, you know, in sight unseen.
He had a moment yesterday where he got a rebound. It was a putback. And if you're 7 foot and you get a putback, you throw it down. He had like a tiptoe layup. I mean, he didn't even go up and dunk it. He didn't get off the ground. He just put it back in. It was like an economy of motion.
You do what you do. The book on him was always his conditioning. I think we saw it a little bit on Friday night. He kind of ran out of gas. But you know what? He's a good player. You know, I don't root for anybody or anything that comes that's owned by Stan Kroenke. So, you know, I'm rooting for him to lose. But I do respect his skill set and what he's been able to take advantage of. Hey, the other thing I want to share, I think, you know, I've been a Klay Thompson hawk as far as the fact that I think he's the most complete player. You know, what Kawhi Leonard's doing now probably moves him at least a half a game, if not a game, in front of Klay Thompson, because he's doing everything on a team that may not have as many skill players as Golden State does.
That was my next question. Is he the second best player in the world right now after Kevin Durant?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Yeah.
It's certainly not Joel Embiid.
Well, you know what? See, here's the deal with Embiid. Embiid doesn't know what night he wants to play. He has as much talent as anybody, but I don't think he takes this as serious as I think he needs to. So, you know what? He's kind of in another category for me at this point. But I think the big question will be in this offseason, where does Kawhi Leonard go? You know, you've heard the Clippers. But you know what? I remember this situation with Toronto with Vince Carter. And everybody thought Vince Carter was going to leave and go somewhere else in his heyday.
Yeah.
And he decided to stay there. They got a good team. They have a really good team.
Gasol really knocks down shots.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but their window is getting smaller as far as having a chance to win. But I think that Kawhi Leonard is the one guy that nobody's talking about as far as the offseason is concerned. I know everybody thinks Durant's going to the Knicks. I think he'd be crazy for going there. But I think that Kawhi Leonard, to me, is the ultimate X factor, because the difference between him and Durant, Kawhi Leonard's the one guy you don't want guarding you.
Yeah.
Period.
I got a kick. You mentioned Embiid about the fact that he calls his coach or texts him at about 6:30 yesterday morning saying, I don't feel good. I don't know if I can go. Could you imagine Michael Jordan calling Phil Jackson before a playoff game? I don't feel good. I'm not sure if I could go. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's that. And you know what? I don't want to say that's today's player, because it's not. The great players find a way to get it done. And let's go back to the Utah game, game six, with Michael being, you know, sick and just willed his team to win. I mean, it was a glory story for sure. But there are a lot more guys that play through it than you think. But Embiid, you know, like I said, physically you have to recognize and respect his talent. But, man, there's more to the game than talent. You know, you got to have the desire and the work ethic and all the other things, and I don't think he's that guy.
Final thought.
I wouldn't invest in him.
Final thought. The Los Angeles Rams, who agreed this winter to a $24 million settlement with thousands of St. Louis fans, are now fighting to get half of that sum paid by the public. The Rams want the St. Louis Convention and Visitors Commission, managers of the city's downtown football stadium, to pay as much as $12 million in settlement fees, and the team is taking the commission back to arbitration to do so. How about that?
You know, on the surface, it sounds like it's an idiotic proposal. But if you peel off page one, they were kind of business partners. And I see where they're going with it. And logically, you know, legally, it probably makes sense to raise that flag and say, wait a minute. I think morally, in what they've done and how they've scarred this city and the billions of dollars that the Rams and Stan Kroenke have, this is child's play as far as money's concerned. And to haggle over $12 million, you know, when you probably owe the city more, I just think it's just another a sign of greed on the part of Stan Kroenke and being cheap.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Billionaires don't get that way by just being philanthropists all the time. So, you know, when you see a guy like Kroenke, you know, what do you expect?
Yeah, can you imagine, too? I mean, he's haggling over this $12 million. What if he loses the really big lawsuit looming, and it could be $100 million or something like that?
Then some people, some witnesses will be coming up missing. You know, I mean, I don't think Kroenke lets that go to court. And you know what's interesting? You know, they love arbitration, man. I mean, how many times have we heard them want to go to arbitration and certainly mediation? You know, although mediation doesn't do what arbitration can do, they must feel like they got some people they can buy off somewhere along the way, because that seems to be their weapon of choice. The last thing they want to do is be in a courtroom in the city of St. Louis testifying in front of a jury of St. Louisans who already have probably heard the story and know enough to be dangerous, and they know they couldn't win in court. So it's unfortunate, but, you know, it just goes to show you this is what happens when you get in bed with people like this, and this is another reason why city governments should never enter into these sort of projects and building facilities and doing things with people that you can't trust or work with and who had no real good reputation before you went into business with them.
Well stated. Mike, thanks so much. I'll see you at the ballpark tonight. Thank you, sir.
All right, Frank. Good talking to you.
All right. The great Mike Claiborne joining us, Hollywood Casino Press Box. A quick word about one of our sponsors before we go to break, and that, of course, the great people at the Gatesworth. Finest in senior living. If you're looking for a place for mom or dad, aunt or uncle, grandma or grandpa, why not the Gatesworth? Answer always yes when you call down to the front desk. It's like living on a cruise ship. The meals, the activities, the movies, everything is great. The Gatesworth, the finest in senior living. We'll take a break. When we come back, a story about a couple of local baseball players who are really tearing it up. We'll be right back.